the toad. Waiting, wondering is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, light up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might.
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, this is the Shame-Free Zone, and I am your host, Veronica Monet. Thank you so much for tuning in this evening. Tonight we're going to be talking about alchemical yoga. We're also going to be taking a little side trip on raw foods and what that might have to do with your sex life. And our esteemed expert on both of these topics is joining us here in the Shame Free Zone. Her name is Shava Ayima, and she comes from, or she is in Austin, Texas. I don't actually know where she originated from, but she's the author of a book called Living Light, the 21-Day Alchemical Regeneration Plan. She's also an ordained minister and the founder of the nonprofit Enlightened Life Sanctuary, which is also located in Austin, Texas. And she's got an interesting history here. She's actually a former psychotherapist who specializes in systems of holistic psychology, including Hermetic Kabbalah, Rosicrucian Alchemy, Kundalini Yoga, and Tantra. Shava, welcome to the Shame Free Zone.
Thank you, Veronica. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'm really excited about tonight's topics because I know so little about, I know a little bit about raw food, not as much as I'd like, and I know nothing about alchemical yoga. So hoping to get a real education this evening. But maybe before we dive into those topics, you could tell us just a little bit more about yourself. Specifically, maybe what had you go that journey from being a psychotherapist into an ordained minister? What was that journey like?
You know, during the time that I worked as a psychotherapist, I specialized in treating trauma, the outcome of trauma, which, you know, has tremendous psychological impact on the human. And also I specialized in treating addictions, you know, which is often found running right alongside the trauma because it's people will tend to self-medicate. But what I was doing simultaneously was studying with a mystery school, learning about the ancient esoteric psychologies of Kabbalah and alchemy, and I was seeing my work through the things I was learning. So it opened the doorway for a lot of different kinds of experiences to take place, and for healing to happen a lot more quickly and a lot more easily than the strictly clinical approach to psychotherapy. It really showed me the spiritual dimension of the people that I was working with. You might imagine going into the depths of the emotion of traumatic exposure and then the recovery process. It's very difficult, you know, and I knew that I, as a human being, as a human psychotherapist sitting there, there was nothing you can do, you know, there's nothing anyone can do. The thing has happened. And it really became about bearing witness, and as I learned to surrender to that, I saw the healing that happens because of the spiritual force that knows everything and understands everything, and if we just open the gateway for that, then all healing could happen. So it was a natural next step to say, I want to know more about that force that is on the other side of that gateway. And I found myself moving from psychotherapy practice into ashrams and sitting at the feet of sages and visiting masters all over the world and diving really deep into the traditions of alchemical transformation.
That's an amazing journey. So really, it sounds like your search was really about trying to find ways to heal your clients, and that you could see there was something going on that was beyond the practice of psychotherapy, and you became quite curious to find out more about that. Did I get that right?
Yeah, well, no, I kind of left the profession because I saw its limitations. Once I had greater contact with that force, you know, being brave enough to say to clients, okay, I don't know what lies on the other side of this, but we're surrendering to it. And then, boom, I mean, things would happen, extraordinary manifestations of light, the coming of angels, the phenomenon of all kinds would happen, tangible things, you know, that if any other therapist would say, this is crazy. But those drove me out of that limited setting and into an arena where those contacts were the norm. And that way of healing was the predominant way. And, of course, it was extraordinarily transformative for me because alchemy is about transforming yourself from the human into the divine.
Okay, well, that's a nice segue into now. Did alchemy or alchemical? Is it we say alchemical or alchemy?
Alchemical yoga. Yeah, they call it alchemical yoga.
Would you say that you invented that, or is this something that you learned from some other yoga?
No, I am the founder and the originator of the alchemical yoga tradition.
Okay.
I chose that name to show the synthesis of the two streams of both the Western and the Eastern alchemical traditions, which both are used for the same purposes, in fact, probably go back to the same root. But the understandings are a little bit different, the presentation is slightly different, the practices are slightly different, and it's some of them are really amazing, the transformations that you get when you start to do the practices. So for me, it was about finding, you know, in ashrams and through old occult manuscripts, in the case of the Western teachings, techniques that I could use and apply to work with my body. Your body is the primary matter to be worked upon in alchemy, and that is what alchemy, the old word, means, the matter, and the matter is the body. And so it points very directly to the body. And as I worked with the techniques and the practices from both streams, both the East and the West, I realized, you know, one without the other isn't really complete. And so I've merged them and synthesized them into alchemical yoga. And I took away the mystique because a lot of my work now is about making these methods available because of the times that we live in. We need these spiritual technologies that are our birthright without a lot of having to study for 18 years obscure things that are difficult to conceive of, because in the end, it's all beyond the mind anyway.
Well, and that is an interesting thing now. I mean, there are seem to be a lot of branches of Tantra, each basically saying they're the one true Tantra.
Well, first of all, the number one thing that's a big red flag, the one and only is a red flag to this is not the thing you want to get involved in, because any legitimate spiritual tradition will tell you that, you know, even back in the day of Hermes, who was the original Egyptian adept who taught alchemy, there is nothing new under the sun, and that was in his time. So all we're doing from age to age is refining these essential wisdom teachings. And they exist in various schools and various lineages through hundreds of different orders and lineages. But the teachings are essentially the same. The goals is essentially the same. And I think that, you know, we're in a time of collaboration, creating a greater community, interfacing, interconnecting, and merging the traditions into unity and into oneness, bringing diversity into, you know, a unified stream, if you will. And I don't think anything can say this is the one and only. And if it is saying this is the one and only, then it's not something that you might want to really pursue, because to have the choice to have access to a range of techniques that come from tens of thousands of years of tradition, practice, and experience and proof is a whole lot better than to have something that says we're the only one. Well, that's rather tough because there's billions of people in the world and there's lots of different notes of music and everyone responds to their own song. And so it's very important to have all of these different traditions available.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that's great. So the fact that you're taking the Western and the Eastern and blending it, maybe before you explain what that actually means, you could tell us a little bit about the Western and the Eastern and how they differ from each other.
Okay. Alchemy in the West goes back to Egypt and probably also back to ancient Middle Eastern cultures that around the time of the Egyptians. The Egyptians also had a use of Kabbalah. Kabbalah came originally prior to the tribes of Israel. It was taught by the Chaldeans, who were considered magicians, and it was written in the ancient flame alphabet, and then converted into Hebrew. But the Egyptians also had it. So Kabbalah is basically one of the devices used in alchemy. Now, not all Kabbalah is alchemical, and not all alchemy uses Kabbalah, but an alchemical Kabbalist is a very astute practitioner. Kabbalah is about psychology. It's about the human as a divine being, the microcosm as the macrocosm, or the little god, child of the parent god that you become one with. So it addresses all these different levels of your being, your personality, your soul, and your spiritual essence. And it gives you a variety of really potent methods to work with and meditate on and grow those connections and unify those parts of your being. So it's a very powerful discipline. Alchemy in the Egyptian traditions had to do with spiritualizing the physical body, using dietary practices like fasting and particular types of prayer, conscious awareness of your connection to nature, conscious awareness of the sexual energy in your body, and working consciously with all of those things. They also, ancient alchemists also taught about the kundalini, and they also pointed to the raw food. This is where the connections between raw food and alchemy in my work come from. The alchemists talked about the blood of the plants, the juicing of green plants, how the green plants held the sun, and it was the solar force that the alchemist had to have to enlighten the physical body, to bring it into a changed chemical state that would then cause the consciousness to change because you're changing the brain chemistry. So it's a very scientific approach, Western alchemy. You know, it really says enlightenment is a physiological process. It deals with internal cleansing. They have practices for purification. And that's where the book Living Light came from, was a 21-day alchemical regeneration plan. Because in the East also, the alchemical traditions there also teach about creating a body of light, creating the enlightened body, doing purification practices, spiritualizing the physical body, the merging of spirit and matter into oneness, into unity. And they had their own protocols for that as well. So they're very similar. They just had different types of practices. So alchemical yoga brings all of those practices together in a 7-stage developmental process of alchemical transformation. Now, Living Light is the book, and that's directed toward the purification practice, which is a 21-day raw food diet and juice fasting and internal cleansing, along with specific alchemical meditations and an alchemical yoga physical exercise practice that you do every day. It also includes some pranayama, some breathing practices. It's a really...
So how would this be different than, you know, lots of people go to yoga classes. So how would this particular lifestyle differ from just simply eating raw food and going to a yoga class?
Well, it's not so much about the physical yoga class. There's a lot of alchemical practices that don't involve doing yoga, asanas. You know, yoga asanas is maybe 10% of alchemical yoga. It's a whole way of life. It asks you to be aware of nature, tune in with nature, recognize your body is the earth. It has a oneness with the earth. increasing your awareness along those lines, getting out in nature, getting away from cities, crowded environments, all these things designed to purify the body, bring it to a higher state. You're eating a diet that never includes animals and probably should not include dairy. It's progressive. The stages of alchemical yoga are progressive. There are certainly great attainments and healings that people can attain and not go into the higher practices. So you can take it to whatever level you want to take it to.
Meaning that some people would be able to start your practice without giving up meat, or they absolutely have to give up meat?
No, they don't have to give up meat to start doing alchemical yoga. You can start with alchemical meditations. Alchemical meditations work on the etheric body, and in an alchemy we say the etheric body reflects the physical and the physical reflects the etheric, so they're very dependent on each other. The etheric body is actually, the source of your light body, and provides soul contact with your physical body, which is, of course, in alchemy what we always want more of until it absolutely takes over all of the cells. But when you have a distortion in the physical body, it's going to be reflected in the etheric body. So meat eating is causing, a distortion in the physical body, and then that's reflected in the etheric. But if you start doing the alchemical meditations and you start changing your etheric body and you start doing these other practices, what you'll find is that automatically your diet will change and you won't want to eat meat anymore.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's what happened for me. It's like it was a spontaneous thing that came up from doing the practices in a concentrated way for a 6-month period of time, and then I just couldn't eat it anymore.
So what do you, what's the difference now? I meditate every day. I'm going to be taking a yoga class on Wednesday. What is the difference between alchemical meditation and regular meditation?
The goal. I would say the goal is different. In regular meditation, you're looking to still your mind. Is that
right?
Is that correct? That's the kind of meditation. That's a great thing to do because it's great for stress relief, and it's great for keeping you centered, and it keeps a conduit open for spiritual connection, which is always to be encouraged. So I'm not saying that's not a good way to meditate, because it's a great way to meditate. But alchemical meditation is active. It's working in a meditative state for a particular purpose, like to radiate the light body in a particular way. It's configurations of light energy moving in different ways. For example, in the Living Light program, it's a 3-week program, so there's a different alchemical meditation for each week of the program, and each one of those has a different purpose in terms of what it's doing to your light body. So you might do your alchemical meditation, there's a meditation disc that goes with the book, but they're like 5 to 16 minutes. The longest one is 16 minutes. So if you say you're doing a 7-minute alchemical meditation, you would do that and then just go into your silent meditation from there. That's a really great way to do it because it allows what you just did to integrate without mind.
Without mind?
Without mind, yeah. Once you finish the alchemical meditation, you're not actively using your mind to focus on the imagery anymore. Now you can go silent. Now that energy can integrate without any mental interference. So that's a very good way to do the alchemical meditations. But the meditations are active. They're using the mental energy that in the silent meditation, we're stilling that energy.
Right.
We're trying to just detach from it, let it go until it ceases.
Right.
In the alchemical meditations, you are harnessing that mental energy and making it work the way you want it to work to accomplish a particular purpose between your bodies. Let's put it that way.
Now, would this ever relate at all to like creative visualization or magic, or is there any connection there in any shape, or am I completely off there?
Well, you are using your imaginative ability, so you're using your ability to visualize, but the visualizations are set They're not free-flowing. They're traditional. The ones in the book come from both the Rosicrucian alchemical traditions of Egypt and also the there's a Tibetan Indian alchemical meditation in there as well. So they're very traditional sequencing that you're doing in the way that you're generating the imagery. But you're always working with imagery of light in all of the meditations. But it's not free flow, you know, it's not just a free, just imagine light. You're looking at light and moving it in specific patterns in and through the physical body and the aura.
Wow. Very, very fascinating. So when people come to your, I guess you have, is it some kind of a center or a retreat that you have in Austin?
No, I don't have a retreat in Austin. I do work with people individually, and I also work in small group offerings from time to time.
Oh, okay. So the Life Sanctuary, Enlightened Life Sanctuary.
Enlightened Life Sanctuary, it's a nonprofit organization. It has a little headquarters office in Austin, Texas. Handles all of our nonprofit publishing work and all three of our websites, and you know, works to collaborate with other entities to create sustainable and enlightened life on Earth. And the publishing division, of course, is devoted to making available the esoteric traditions of the saints, yogis, and adepts of Europe, of all of the mystical traditions, in practical, accessible, easy-to-use manuals, which is a project we've been working on the last few years, and we have some really great titles coming out in the next 6 months.
Now, would you want our listeners to visit enlightenedlife.org or alchemicalyoga.com?
I would love it if they would visit both, but enlightenedlife.org, remember, is a nonprofit. It's an international nonprofit. It's a terrific website full of all kinds of information and resources on enlightened living, from food and diet and meditation to changing the world to, you know, the importance of environmentally sensitive life on Earth. It's just a really great resource. You can sign up for the newsletter there, which is a very informative newsletter. And then Alchemical Yoga gives you more in-depth information about the actual teachings of alchemy that I offer. And that's alchemicalyoga.com.
Okay. Yeah, so, I'm over here on Enlightened Life right now, and I see that, you know, I'm going to like it on Facebook. So that
we do have an Enlightened Life group on Facebook.
To my listeners, you know, for those of you who are my friends on Facebook right now, I just marked Enlightened Life as a like, so it should come up on my wall right now, and you could be able to follow that link. And I'm looking here. You've got sacred art, and you've got a blog. So. Yes, we've got things like visionary art by Maya Christian, Bridging Heaven and Earth art project by Alan Silverhart.
Yeah, that's great art. There's some great art projects. We're very supportive of sacred artists, especially in the times we live in.
And what times do we live in, as far as you're concerned?
Well, I think we live in a time of great awakening, and the great awakening affects everybody in a different way, you know, depending on where you are. For people who are, you know, really on the cusp of the evolution in consciousness that's taking place, it's an awakening into a higher understanding of every aspect of life, every aspect of life. It's very Plutonian times we're living in. Pluto's the planet of radical transformation. So it goes to the root of everything we've thought about. Everything is now coming into a more open, more awakened, more loving, more unified configuration. So the awakening for other people is a disruption, you know, primarily a disrupting vibration that's shaking out lower consciousness, shaking out more limited consciousness. And, you know, so it can be a very intense time as well.
Well, when you say shaking things out, do you think that that has any direct connection to all these earthquakes?
Yeah, that's definitely a part of it. You know, in 2000, I received a prophecy, which is common in alchemical yoga. You know, we connect to the traditions of the prophets, and so to receive prophecy is part of, you know, what an accomplished Kabbalist would normally come to at some point in their life. So I did receive a prophecy in 2000 about the coming times, and one thing that was very much indicated with was increased earthquakes, greater severity in earthquakes, tsunamis. It was said in the prophecy, the earth herself is being and going through this transformation, this initiatory transformation that is causing, you know, the body of the earth to rise and rise and reconfigure itself. So the very powerful set of circumstances. The alchemical prophets had a prophecy of 2012 where, you know, they pointed to the sun of our solar system coming into exact alignment with the central sun of the universe, and that points to a very extreme amount of light, an extreme alignment with light going on. And so what happens when you focus in greater light, all the shadows are seen, and then they're scattered away, of course. So I think we're going through some times now of seeing a lot of shadow being brought forward.
And when you talk about bringing a lot of shadow forward, what specifically are you talking about?
Well, shadow always represents limitation, things that, you know, might be hiding under the surface, like racism, bigotry, hatred of all kinds, limiting thoughts, plots of violence, you know, people who live in such extreme separation that they lose track of the inherent connectedness of all life. You know,
a lot of fear.
A lot of fear. Yeah, a lot of fear. It's a threat. You know, it's a threat to what's familiar, even though what's familiar is completely outworn and doesn't fit the current energy anymore. The new energy is so big and so powerful that it's like trying to put too much water in a glass, you know, and it overflows, and the glass either shatters or, you know, or overflows. And so in some cases you're seeing a lot more ugliness, you know, the dark side of humanity, the worst separation. But you're seeing it because it's not going to survive the change. It's being shown, you know.
So it's kind of like a last backlash to the change that's taking place?
Yeah, it's exactly right. It's the dying breaths, or the death throes of the old way, trying to fight to maintain the status quo in the face of a descent of a very great transformation of consciousness. It will try, but it will not prevail.
Well, that's a process that takes place on an individual level as well. When an individual is trying to effect great change in their life, a lot of times there'll be kind of a backlash to it and a return to some old addictive patterns or negative habits. Wouldn't you agree?
Sure, and that's why, you know, all of the beginning practices in alchemical yoga are aimed at disengagement, detachment. You know, along with purification, we're also working on disintegration, which is that explosion, you know, that looking to break the energy free from being held in all of these lesser forms within the human, you know, the reconfiguration, the release and the transformation of the sexual energy, and then disengagement, letting go of attachments, letting go of limitations, blowing the mind. You know, those are parts of the alchemical yoga process.
Right, exactly. Did you just hit their keypad, or do we have a caller? Is there a caller?
No.
I guess not. Sometimes when we've got callers on the line, there's a little beep tone, but I think maybe you just accidentally hit your keypad on your phone.
Oh, I didn't hear it.
No, that's okay.
Sorry.
We do have a caller. speak up. You're on the shame-free zone.
Yeah, I'd love to take calls because, you know, the questions, because everybody these days is in such a, so many different places with these processes that I'm discussing, and I really like to be able to talk to where each person is at with the process. So,
and we certainly do invite the callers, and our number here at the Shame Free Zone is area code 530-413-4515. What I have found, however, is that a lot of people are a little shy about the phones. We got a caller last week, but we did get more comments on Facebook, and I actually have a comment for you. The question that I had posed on Facebook was, can a raw food diet improve your sex life? And Ray Sunglau, he's a student at the culinary school. He just started there in February, and his comment was a little bit lengthy here, so bear with me, but he says, one thing that is almost certain for most issues regarding diet and health, if you go looking for answers to any question with regard to improved health due to whatever diet, you're going to find it. There have been studies that suggest that drinking one beer a day is good for you. Coffee has added health benefits, another study reports. Can a raw diet improve your sex life? Sure. Does it have to be raw? Not necessarily. A raw diet has the added benefit of vitamins and nutrients still present in most of the items prepared, so you're getting most, if not all, the nutrients when you eat it. I think this is key. Whether the diet is raw or not, so long as you maintain a diet that utilizes fresh ingredients and cooking methods that will maintain the food's nutrients, you'll be well on your way to a very healthy and productive sex life. Since starting culinary school in February, I've drastically improved my diet. I hate that word. Let's just say nutrition. I've drastically improved my nutrition by utilizing fresh ingredients. I mainly use fresh produce, meats, seafood, breads, which I now purchase from a bakery or bake my own. My energy level is up, if that's even possible, and I can honestly say I feel great. Has it improved my sex life? Sure. Bottom line, eat healthy, exercise, and avoid processed foods, fast food, and junk food. You'll feel better, and when you feel better, you'll do everything better. Now, of course, this would be your opportunity to respond to his comments.
Sure. Well, you can't go far wrong with the key points that he makes. You know, it's all about getting enough nutrition into the body as far as being healthy is concerned. You know, and as I said before, we can talk about these things on several different levels. If you want to improve your health, of course, improving your diet is going to improve your health. Giving the body greater nutrition is going to improve your health. How you define your sex life depends on how you want to feed your sex life. You know, if his sex life is happy with what he's eating, that's great. If other people's sex lives are not happy, they could try tweaking their diet. I'm a kundalini yogini. I'm an alchemical tantrika, and I can't say that I have the same perspective on the sex life as the commenter on the site, though I welcome his remarks. What alchemical yoga is pointing to is an extraordinary experience of fusion of the physical body with the spirit. And that's a whole different place than I'm having a good sex life.
Well, you probably have a different definition of sex, too, wouldn't you?
Sure, of course. Whether it be to an alchemical yogini or an alchemical yogi, you could have this fusion, this experience, this amazing cosmic bliss without having a partner. So it is quite different. Now, for people who have a partner, want to do practices with partners, I suggest you try it, experiment with it. If you haven't ever done it, experiment with it, because I think you'll see something changes. But I will say this, you can't just like eat raw food for one day and then expect you're going to see a change, you know. Natural things take time. Eliminating meat from the body does a lot of different things. It gives the digestive tract a chance to recover from the long journey of the meat, which, meat-eating animals have a very short digestive tract, humans have a very long digestive tract, so before the meat can be fully, by the time it's halfway through the process, it's already fermenting and rotting. So it creates a reaction in the gut where not all of it gets out of there. This is why we do regular cleansing, regular internal cleansing. If you don't think your digestive tract is linked to your sex life, you really should try the Living Light plan and do the internal cleansing and see the difference that happens in your energy. It's amazing. It's having a connection with a person in an intimate setting for the sake of sharing sacred energy, the more you approach it as a sacred event, the more you purify for it, the more you get ready for it, the more you're going to get from it. If it's not a sacred event, sure, go ahead and eat a good, healthy diet and have a great life. But if you want to have, the sacrament that is possible through that union, then take the time to do the purification practices. Do the raw food. Not eating enhances that connection more than eating anything.
And you actually talk about something called mastery of sexual energy and spiritualizing the body. Can you explain those two? Because, that sounds like pretty esoteric terms. I think the average listener is probably going to have a little trouble understanding what you mean by those.
Yeah, it is an interesting concept, and it's unique to the alchemical traditions. They say that we can do these practices, purify the body, and then cause a descent of our spiritual force to come into the body in greater quantity, that it can actually take charge of the body. So even human consciousness is, somewhat subsumed in that new consciousness. In that event comes the potential for immortality. Certainly, long life is something that's been known by the alchemists for ages. They know the secrets of it being healthy and youthful for very long periods of time. Some of the alchemists are said to be 300 or more years of age. Some alchemists are documented of having appeared 100 years or more in different places, in times in Europe where, the average lifespan was 43. So we know that the practices of alchemy extend the life of the body. Why are we extending the life of the body? The idea is, if you think about the soul as the eternal being, that it comes from life to life. It has a life and then it dies, the body dies, and then it goes out, and then it reincarnates, gets another body, has another life. Both traditions of alchemy agree with reincarnation. So the alchemist says, well, why should I have to go through that process over and over? I have to be born, and then I'm going to receive conditioning, and conditioning is considered, the messages that society gives you, and you eat the wrong food, and your body gets impure, and all these things, which, of course, in the new times won't be so much of that going on. But he would say, once I come to a certain age, I begin spiritual practice, I throw off all these things, I start making progress, then the body dies. Then I got to come back and go through it again. So why don't we just stay in the body long enough to get the wisdom to attain the place where we don't then have to reincarnate? So this is where the practices come from in the traditions, the idea of getting free of the wheel of death and rebirth. And that's why we would want to stay in the body long enough to do that. So we have that idea in place. Of course, it's a goal, and it's not something that's attained by many people. But I think in the future, there certainly will be more people that are prepared to actually live these teachings once again in their fullness. When we talk about mastering the energy, there's energy in the body, the sexual energy. That's your life force energy or your vital essence. When you have a partner and you're just in the regular mode of, having pleasure, which is great, and having love, which is wonderful, then the energy is flowing from the lower chakras or focused mainly in the lower chakras. What the alchemist does is work with that energy in a way that moves it internally upward from the lower chakras into the higher chakras. This happens in Kundalini yoga, not so much in the Kundalini yoga classes, but in the Kundalini yoga tradition. There's yoga tradition in India means you go and you become a yogi or yogini. You live a certain way of life. You don't, you know, you don't have a job and life and all that sort of thing. Over here, it means you go to a yoga class, which is a good thing, but it's not the same thing. So when we talk about alchemical yoga, we're talking about a way of life in which you want to become the greatest, most radiant being that you can be and live this life from that point of view. So we're looking at talking about a way of life. So we want to move the energy, the sexual energy, in a different way. Instead of just having it flow out from the lower chakras, we want to start to move it upward. And typically, the practice would involve celibacy for a period of time. You would undertake celibacy. And this is called harnessing the serpent or riding the dragon.
Because this is actually a very tantric concept, yes?
Yeah, exactly. Well, these are alchemical images, you know, they have all these things like in their imagery and in their obscure writings where they point to things with symbolic language like serpents and dragons. But the idea
the kundalini energy is supposed to be a coiled snake at the base of the spine, yes?
Yes, kundalini means coiled up. That's exactly what it means. And the alchemists call that the serpent power because it moves in an undulating way, like a snake. When it comes up, it doesn't move in a straight line. It moves like a serpent from side to side. It also involves there's three channels, you know, the Sushumna, the main channel, that's where the kundalini rises. It's equated to the spine, but it's actually in the etheric body. And then there's two side channels that the alchemists call the lunar and the solar currents, and those have to open up as well, and then the energy flows very much in a, you know, like the caduceus of Hermes, if you know the medical symbol of the serpent going around the pole. That's
right.
The pole with the wings on top. That's a symbol of the kundalini rising. That's where all healing comes from. That's why they use that symbol. You heal everything when you raise the kundalini. You begin the journey from human to divine, and it has to affect your physical body. It will affect your physical body, and you start to see what the physical body really is, which is a vehicle for this greater consciousness and force.
Well, so since you're practicing this, have you achieved a more youthful body or cured yourself of any kind of diseases? Or I'm just wondering what kind of effect it's had on you physically.
I don't get any diseases. I don't get diseases. If I start to get sick or something, I just eat the right raw food or I fast or something like that. And, you know, working with nature, the divine creator that is the cosmic kundalini provides everything through nature. That's an alchemical fact. When you're born in natural state, you're born naked on the earth. So whatever you can get with your hands from the plants, that's your food. That's the natural way. So when you live like that, you don't get sick. That's the promise of the Creator. If you eat the plants and trees, the fruit-bearing trees and plants and seeds and nuts and things of the earth that grow on the plants that are live, that have life force energy in them, then that's the tree of life. You will live. You will live healthy and you will live long.
And have you noticed it having rejuvenating qualities for you as far as youthfulness?
Yes, I regenerate on a regular basis. And people tell me all the time, I'll tell you one story. Back when I first started practicing and when I still sort of had a part-time psychotherapy practice and I was starting to do more intensive spiritual practices, my daughter was in high school at the time, and I knew all of her friends. And then time passed, I quit my practice. Practices that I was doing got more intense. Pretty soon I was traveling. I was in Europe for a while, doing more practices, receiving initiations, then going to India, living in different ashrams, going through practices, getting awakened to Kundalini, learning all of these techniques and getting more initiations. And it was maybe 7 or 10 years that passed, and then I came back, and I was with my daughter, and she said, oh, this girl's coming over. It was one of the friends from high school, and she came, and she said, it can't be your mother. And she said, yes, that is my mother. And she said, no, she's younger than she was when we were in high school.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's true, compared to the other mothers.
Wow.
Yeah, no, very youthful, very energetic, high level of bliss, high level of ecstasy, high level of radiance. And the great thing about it is if you get out in city environments and you get around a lot of people, you know, it takes a bit of a beating, that status. You start to get the free radicals again. So you really got to keep with the raw food, high raw green juices, pump up the antioxidants, and then retreat, get away from it, go into nature. It's so restorative. There was a famous yogi in the alchemical traditions in India. The story was he every so often would regenerate his body, and you know, he would start to look old, and his teeth would start to fall out, and he'd get wrinkled and gray, and he would go into a cave, and he would close the door, and he would be hidden in the way in that cave. No food, no water. He would be in a complete fasting state, in complete darkness. And then when he came out of the cave, he would be youthful again, perfect teeth, dark hair, muscles, no wrinkles. He would be perfect. And, you know, he would he did this about three or four times, and then finally around the age of 88 or so, they said, oh, are you going to regenerate again? He said, no, my time is finished here, and I'm leaving the body. So, but these are the things that are, you know, possible with alchemy.
Well, now you mentioned something about the Kundalini awakening. What is a Kundalini awakening?
Well, Kundalini is what keeps your body alive. So everybody has it. But there's way more of it in your body than you realize. And mostly you don't realize it because a lot, if you have a active sexual life, a lot of your Kundalini energy is going out as sexual energy. So the first thing that what we want to do in the alchemical traditions is we want to increase that energy. So there's a variety of methods of doing that, ways of increasing it. But the first way to increase something is to stop dissipating it. So we learn, you know, in the beginning, a lot of alchemy preparation is about what we cut out of our life and not so much what we add to it. You know, so we'd cut out eating meat because in the ashram, so when a Kundalini would rise, you know, you probably have heard, and people I'm sure are aware of all the stories about the effects that can happen if you have a spontaneous awakening. You can get into an altered state where you're just not there. You know, you've gone into the bliss. And the master or the instructor, the initiator, usually can bring you the person back by their own energy. It's cosmic energy. It's what animates all of life. We have a secret store of it inside of ourselves in the sacral chakra of the body. And they say it's coiled up sleeping, and that's the best thing for most people, because if it woke up, it would drive them insane. That's why, you know, it's in tradition, in the Kundalini yoga tradition, you have a teacher, and you connect with that teacher on a regular basis, and they monitor your progress, and they help your awakening. Once it's awakened, it wakes itself up in the other person. So the teacher is really just a conduit for it, in a sense, do you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's not like I'm giving you something that you don't have. That I do, it's that I already got out of the way of it, and now it can come through me and get you out of the way of it in yourself. Because it recognizes itself everywhere. That's our oneness. That's what it is. It's the energy of our oneness, of our spiritual oneness. So the Kundalini is about, you know, that's really the tradition that the teacher will wake it up. And once that happens, you start to have some symptoms. You might feel there's traditionally said to be knots in different places where energy could be blocked because of experiences or things like that. But I did want to mention that if it raises up and it comes, brings you into that state of ecstatic absorption, and there's a need to come back and you're not coming back, or the teacher's, you know, working it energetically but it's not happening, what I saw them do in the ashram in India was call out to someone to bring some meat, bring some cooked meat. And they would make this, you know, put it in their mouth and feed them the meat. And then the Kundalini would go back down.
So this is actually one way to revive them, huh?
Yeah, in a sense. But it also points to what consuming meat in your diet might be doing to your Kundalini fire.
Hmm. Now, is the Kundalini awakening related to something called a Kriyas or a Kriya? I'm not even sure how to say the word, but I think it's spelled K-R-I-Y-A-S.
Yeah, Kriyas means can mean technique or method. It also can mean a discharge of energy or a release of energy.
Right, and I'm thinking about the release of energy, specifically
okay.
spontaneous muscular contractions. Because
that's
something that people are often warned about.
Yeah, that's very common when the Kundalini is awakening and rising. When my Kundalini was waking up, I had a whole night where I laid awake with my body undulating in the shape of like an S from side to side, just over and over, endlessly, until it finally, you know, what it's trying to do is get control, is get into the cells of the body. And the body is the repository of everything we've had so far in this life. It also manifests all of the karmas of the past lives as well. So it's not a simple thing to clear the body. And, of course, it's best to prepare to awaken the Kundalini before you take that step. The more preparation you do, the less you'll have, you know, unpleasant symptoms or difficult symptoms. I didn't find the undulating to be bad at all. I found it extraordinarily ecstatic. I absolutely loved it. It was really good. It wasn't like, you know, uncontrolled muscle spasms. It was like a
right.
natural flow of this natural energy that I was just being overtaken by.
And how long did it last?
Probably about 24 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
It would make it very difficult to, like, show up for a day job or something, wouldn't it?
Exactly, which is why I'm, you know, saying you can take these practices to any point. Well, say you just want to get healthier, you want to detox, you want to regenerate, reverse your aging, get your energy back, you know,
right.
Get rid of your wrinkles, lose some weight. The Living Light plan is a really good plan for that. It's very healing. You're also using the alchemical meditations in there along with the diet, the internal cleansing, the juice fasting. You're learning solar, you know, how to work with solar energy, the ancient Egyptian traditions of solar healing. There's the alchemical meditations that are extraordinary. I've had people who are doing the day job, you know, doing the day-to-day life. They do the program for 3 weeks. In one of the meditations, one of the women in one of the retreats I held had actually went into that ecstatic state just from the alchemical meditation. People have lost, you know, like if they need to lose weight, they've lost up to 26 pounds in 21 days. Lower cholesterol levels been returned to normal, blood pressure's returned to normal, diabetes comes under control.
Wow.
Weight is, you know, all these youthful energy is restored. I had one man, he was, you know, in his mid-60s. He did the program, met up with his family afterwards. They couldn't believe it, how youthful he was. Where was his wrinkles? Where was his pot belly? He wasn't stooped over anymore. Not only that, he went back to playing tennis and golf.
That's amazing. Now, we've got a couple of beep tones here. I still think maybe you're hitting your keypad there, but I'm going to just ask if we've got a caller on the line. Do we have a caller for the shame-free zone? Nope, guess not. Okay, well, it doesn't sound like our tone anyway, but I thought I'd check.
Okay, well, I still didn't hear a tone.
Okay. We'll just keep going here. You know, does any of this have any connection to fire breath orgasm, which is another tantric procedure or
Well, you know, I don't teach the modern Western Tantra traditions of doing practices during sexual encounters with other people. I do teach some alchemical Tantra practices with a partner. So I'm not sure that I'm addressing the same thing. But Breath of Fire is a traditional Kundalini yoga breath. And I could imagine that Breath of Fire would have a great effect on orgasm or the retention of the state of the peak level.
I took a fire breath orgasm from a tantric by the name of Jawala years and years ago, and I had no idea what I was getting into. It was really a kind of a mind-expanding experience for me, and frankly, a frightening one. At the time, I found it frightening. A room full of women, they're all laying on their backs, contracting their PC muscles and tilting their pelvises, but everybody's fully dressed. Nobody's touching their genitals. Nobody's touching each other. And other than the conscious breathing technique and the contraction of the PC muscles, that was it. That's all that was happening. And so after about 20 minutes, people started having these spontaneous tantric orgasmic experiences, and I thought that it was kind of some mass hysteria. These people were misguided and silly, and I was kind of looking around for my handbag and my purse because I was getting ready to get the heck out of there. And just about that time, I was still doing the ritual, but I was really starting to separate from it because it was kind of freaking me out. And I had it felt literally like a ball of fire at the base of the spine, shot up the spine and out the top of my head. Now, it never even stopped to say hello to my genitals. It was not a genitally expressed orgasm. The only way I could call it an orgasm is because it was such an ecstatic release of energy. And for me, it felt like I was one with the universe in that moment. And since I was unprepared for it, it was actually a pretty scary thing. You know, since then, I've gotten past that, but that was like 20 years ago. And I'm wondering if this ties in any way to any of the Eastern and Western modalities of yoga and some of the tantric, you know, things that you're teaching around mastery of sexual energy.
Right. It sounds like a combination of techniques. Like the first thing is you're doing what's traditionally called a bandha lock. You're locking the root chakra. You're tightening the muscles. You know, for a woman, it's like a, you know, the PC muscles, the basic Kegel exercise, plus you're tightening the anus. You're contracting, and if you're doing that with a breath, with specific breathing, then you're intensifying that. That could happen with anybody with concentrating on bandha locks. Now, the other thing that comes to mind is the teacher could also be transmitting, which, you know, if he's really a true kundalini or tantric initiator, then they would also be transmitting simultaneously, which will, again, increase the energy. So you have a combination of things occurring there. The key to it, though, is at the end of the day, does it drastically shift your consciousness? Because, you know, there's all kinds of ways to enter into states of ecstasy, and states of ecstasy are great, but that's not the goal. The goal lies beyond states. It lies in a place of absolute transformation, loss of identity, absorption into oneness. Well, which you say you experience, yes, that's what you're experiencing, but we want that to become more and more enduring. So that becomes more and more who we are and what we are. So you should be in that state all the time.
I think I understand what you're saying there. At least I have some of my own thoughts along those lines that I... And I guess this actually goes back to, I apologize for anybody who's, I don't consider myself a Christian, but I was raised as one. So I love this little quote from the Bible about faith without works is dead. And so, yeah, sometimes when I am, some of my tantric friends who are just seem to be into achieving ecstasy, we even have like a little affectionate term, call them energy sluts. And it does appear to have absolutely no purpose whatsoever, except immediate gratification.
Right, right. Well, yeah, sure. That's what those practices will do. But, you know, if you can just take those practices to another level, you can do all kinds of things. You can restore youth in the body. You can heal yourself. You can heal other people. You know, you can stay in this body as long as you want to. So,
well, I think that, yeah, to me that sounds far more interesting. Now, what would you recommend? We've got probably about another 5 minutes here before we should sign off. We run a little bit late this time of evening. What would you recommend to our listeners as far as if they are sitting here going, wow, Wow. Fewer wrinkles. Yeah.
Better
than Botox.
Well, let me give you one more website, and it's a good one because it kind of brings together everything we've talked about, and it also gives you a way to move forward, to do something, to start to have to experience some of these methods.
Okay.
And that is livinglightplan.com. Livinglightplan.com.
So it's http://www.livinglife.
Living light, light, like L-I-G-H-T.
Oh, living light.
L-I-G-H-T plan.com. Livinglightplan.com.
I'm actually posting this to Facebook, so it'll bring it up here in a minute.
Yeah. The book is a three-week program for alchemical regeneration. Now, it's got the raw food diet in there, but it also has more than 100 recipes. It also has menu plans, daily schedules, tips on how to do everything, including a shopping list. Including how to grow your own grass if you want to, for wheatgrass juicing, how to grow sprouts, what all the alchemical teachings are about diet, regeneration, healing, immortality. This is the program that people have amazing experiences with. And this is something that the alchemical yogi or alchemical yogini will do repeatedly, throughout their spiritual progression. So, but for anybody, no matter where you are on the plan, on the program, on the progression in your spiritual life, this program will really help you see the power of alchemy. It includes the meditations. On that site, you can get really the best absolute price anywhere on a package deal on a book and CD, because it's through our nonprofit publishing, Enlightened Life Publishing, and it's just it's a small book, but it's just filled with all kinds of powerful information. The meditations are in there. The yoga is in there. But you also don't have to try to struggle through the visualizations in the book because you can get the meditation CD. So all you have to do is put that CD in 5 to 16 minutes, and it's a different meditation each week of the program. And people rave about the meditations. As much as they love the diet, as much as they love learning how to make delicious raw food and learning juice fasting, they really, really enjoy the meditations. The meditations by themselves will bring changes, as we discussed in the very beginning. And then there's a beautifully illustrated alchemical yoga routine at the that you can do every day while you're on the program.
Wow. Well, while you were explaining it to us, I just posted the link to Facebook. So for those of you who are my friends on Facebook, and I've got over 1,700 of you now, and climbing every day. I seem to add about 50 to 100 friends every day. It's already on my wall, the 21-Day Alchemical Regeneration Plan, Weight Loss, Health, Wellness, Anti-Aging, and Longevity. And once again, that's at Living Light plan.com. But if you happen to be on Facebook, all you got to do is click on it. A cute little book cover here with a naked boy and a naked girl nestled in a field of raw fruits and vegetables.
With a big sun behind them, because what we're eating is light. We're eating sunlight. When we eat the raw food, that's what we're really eating. That's the form that the divine creator, disguised the solar energy in the plants where it takes on specific nutritional properties.
Wow.
And the alchemist consciously extracts the sunlight through a process of conscious digestion. And that talks about that in the book as well. But we're eating the light, and we're living light, and we're becoming light.
Well, this conversation has been very enlightening.
Thank you. I very much enjoyed it. I very much enjoyed speaking with you this evening, Veronica.
Well, same here. Same here. And I have to say, Shema, I learned some things. I really did. I have been introducing more and more raw foods into my own personal diet. And I've noticed that as I clear up old emotional blocks, that my body just seems to gravitate more and more towards that raw food diet. So I've actually experienced quite a few of the things that you talked about in small doses, enough to see that there's quite a bit of credence to what what you're testifying to here.
It has a long and interesting history, the power of raw food in many ways. And
you explore those in your book.
Yes. The main thing to remember is no matter what you're eating, if you want to feel better, get more energy, then just add more raw food. And then do the program. You know, no matter what you're eating, do the program 2 or 3 times a year.
Oh, okay. So you've got to cleanse yourself.
Right. But I'll tell you what, at the end of that 21 days, you won't go back to eating the way you did. Won't want to. You'll be in a completely different place. And
well,
if you do it, I really love to hear from you, even while you're doing it. Get in touch with me through the website.
Okay.
I love to hear how people are experiencing the plan, or if you need any tips or guidance whatsoever, let me know.
Awesome. And I take it that's an offer for everybody who's listening tonight.
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
I'm here to help you attain the light.
Well, thank you for making all of this so down-to-earth and easy to understand. Really appreciate that.
No problem, Veronica.
Okay. Have a wonderful, it's already like 1 o'clock your time, so sleep well.
Thank you. You have a wonderful evening, too.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the Shame Free Zone.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you.